From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The United Nations climate negotiations in Katowice, Poland, wrapped up on Sunday after 2 weeks. The resulting deal is focused on the implementation of the 2015 Paris Accord. The final agreement was signed on to by 196 nations and consists of a set of rules governing how individual countries can implement the 2015 Paris Accord by cutting carbon emissions, finance developing nations' transitions to clean energy, and hold each other accountable. But there were major political battles, even over the very science that forms the basis of the climate meetings, in particular the latest IPCC report on climate. China took a leading role while the U.S. shrank its posturing. Brazil nearly upended the agreement over how to govern carbon markets, and Turkey insisted on being treated as a developing nation in order to be eligible for climate financing. For the climate, however, time has run out. My guest is Jose Bravo. He is the executive director of the Just Transition Alliance based in San Diego, California. He's just returned from Poland. Welcome to the program, Jose.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So first, can you give us, before we get to the important protests that took place inside and mostly outside the climate meetings, let's talk a little bit about the agreement. Many climate justice activists were very disappointed with what was agreed to on Saturday. This was to be the meeting where the important, although modest, Paris Accord was going to have the nuts and bolts decided upon how it was going to be implemented. What's your assessment of what was agreed to?
Well, not very much was agreed to at this meeting. Regretfully, people came in from other countries, not necessarily wanting to agree to the goals set out in Paris. And ultimately, even us on the grassroots level, we didn't agree totally with the Paris Agreement because we didn't think that it took us far enough. So in Poland itself, there were countries such as Saudi Arabia and others that were blocking the process. And we didn't really get to anything that would be substantial.
Right. Saudi Arabia, we heard, had put its foot down earlier in the meeting around the IPCC report, right, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which made it very clear how dire the situation is. And I understand that it got backing from the U.S. and Russia on that.
Yes. So there was the group of bullies at the conference. And, you know, we had been talking to some of the countries in the past several months saying, look, you know, the 900 pound bully, the U.S. is no longer in this process. This is the time when you really can make some good strides moving forward. And ultimately, it didn't land that way in Katowice.
So what role did the U.S. play? I mean, we heard about this bizarre sideshow that took place promoting coal. And in many ways, even just the location of the meeting was very questionable, given that it was in a part of Poland that is entirely based on the coal industry in terms of its economy. And so the U.S. held this event, calling attention to coal as still being important. And I understand that that event was shut down by activists. We'd actually done a report with an activist who was there. Was that the extent of the U.S.'s role?
So again, I think I want to just do partial answers to your question. And one is that for us in the Just Transition Alliance, it was actually good to have the meeting where the whole economy primarily is dependent on coal, because we have to make sure that people understand in coal-dependent countries that there has to be a shift. Those workers in the coal mines and those workers in the coal plants, energy plants, need to be justly transitioned into renewable, good-paying, and sustainable jobs. So for us, from the Just Transition Alliance, we did meet with labor in Poland, and they do have some really surprising understanding of why they need to transition out of these types of fossil fuels. The second piece is that the role of the United States. I think even though that they were not there officially, the United States played, for us, a very disturbing role. You know, they went there to promote coal, and they went there to promote what they call clean coal and other fossil fuels, as well as nuclear energy. And for us, that was like, you know, ludicrous, because here is a conference where countries from throughout the world are coming together to try to do something about the environment. And the U.S. shows up there basically, you know, promoting what's harming the climate, what's causing climate change. So, yeah, you know, you referenced an action. I was participant in the action. And as a result of the participation, my participation specifically, from It Takes Roots and Climate Justice Alliance and others that we went there, you know, the U.S. put a formal process in place where they wanted to get me, my credentials taken away, because supposedly I had pointed at the White House representatives. And
really? So this was halfway through the meeting that they were trying to take your credentials away?
Yeah. So the United States put forth a complaint, and it was interesting. It was against me. But ultimately, you know, what we were there to tell people was that the White House had sent coal and nuclear energy profiteers. The person actually delivering the speech from the White House, you know, his parents own a Shell gas station. And this guy, you know, was there to just push, you know, the dirty fuel. So for us, we had to stop it. And it was very important for us to show up there in mass.
I want to touch on what you said about meeting with members of the labor community in Poland. I understand that that your organization has been around since 1997 and is an alliance with unions in the United States and environmental justice organizations. Very important liaison role, it sounds like your organization is playing. So what was the message that the government of Poland was trying to send in holding the meeting in Katowice, and did it contradict what you ended up finding that actual coal miners and workers in the coal industry feel?
Yeah, so I think the message that the Polish government wanted to send was that, you know, they aren't willing to shift too much around the coal issue, because it is a coal-dependent country. But it was really different meeting with the workers from the energy unions that said, hey, we need a just transition. In fact, they had just signed an agreement with many of the companies that they work for. And for the first time ever did I hear that they were actually putting these types of agreements into their collective bargaining and kind of ensuring themselves resources for the future so that they could transition into cleaner jobs. They promoted the fact that the union support hydrogen and hydrogen energy. But at the same time, they said that, you know, they wanted to get ahead of the curve, and they see that it's very important for them to start transitioning into something sustainable. And at they mentioned the fact that in some of the communities that are represented by labor, there was 45% unemployment due to the closure of coal-fired power plants. So it's in their best interest to come to an agreement with both the industry, those communities around those plants, and the government. And their goal was to raise 40 billion sotsi, which is the currency. Right. And we had already gotten a commitment from the European Union for 2 billion more euros for that.
So in terms of the final agreement, going back to our discussions there, there was disagreement on the very science, as we mentioned, of climate change. But there was also disagreement, which has been the longest running disagreement, I understand, or one of the longest running disagreements at these UN meetings, which is when it comes to money, the financing of the transition, not just within countries, which is what we were just talking about, but internationally. So because, and poorer countries have been saying this at climate meeting after climate meeting, we are not responsible for creating the problem that is now imperiling the entire planet. The rich countries have been primarily responsible. So it's up to them to finance the transition for all these countries to a cleaner energy economy. Was the COP24 meeting any different from previous meetings in terms of this battle, making any headway?
So most of our delegation was in more in the trenches around Article 6, which is the human rights aspect of this agreement, and the fact that Indigenous peoples are not recognized under Article 6 and their human rights because of the UN's what we call false solutions. So that's where we put a lot of our emphasis. But I do want to say something in regards to financing. About 17 years ago, we did an assessment on what it would take the United States itself to move away from fossil fuels into a renewable energy. And it was $368 billion. I think the priorities are for us, they're not good priorities from this country in the United States, where we spent, almost $10 trillion on war. We could have really moved forward and made this planet a better place if those resources were used in a better way.
Now, let's also talk about what access climate justice activists had to the actual area where the delegations were having their discussions. There's been a battle about letting civil society into the halls of discussions because often they hold protests, and rightly so. In previous meetings, there were attempts to keep people out or just be much stricter with the credentials. In Poland, we heard that many activists were simply denied visas to the country itself. And you just told us that your credential was almost lost. What access did grassroots activists have to the inside halls of power?
Well, it depends. We did have several situations where activists from organizations were actually detained and deported before they got to COP24. There was a situation where Polish immigration, I would believe, actually went to hotels and got people out of hotels and deported them or put them in a process of deportation. So, yeah, it was an interesting place, even though, Poland has laws against public activism. There were several marches that took place. Our delegation participated in several of those marches. But again, I think that, this is to be expected. We see this happening more and more at these COPs where people are either denied documentation or deported, or people are repressed in the streets. I think this is what happens when you really jeopardize the way of the empire. And part of this is, we know, is going to happen. So, yeah, there was some repression, and we believe that we still did actions inside, and there were actions outside. But I think it's rising more. The type of oppression is on the rise.
The stakes are higher than ever, especially this year in the United States. We saw the impacts of a warming climate in such a serious way. People, lots of people have died. Even last year's Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico was so devastating and killed untold numbers of people, upwards of thousands. We had the fires in California and the flooding and the freak tornadoes. It just, it's only going to get worse. So the stakes were so high this year. They've now, in many ways, I understand, kicked the can down the road again to the next meeting, which is going to take place in Chile. What are some of the, as far as you know, the details that are left to be decided? What do they expect to be doing year after year after year at these meetings?
Yeah, you know, there's something to be said. We in the environmental justice movement have said that, you know, we're tired of meetings. We want action. And ultimately, you know, by kicking that can down the road, we don't get too much action. But again, there's countries there that are already feeling the effects of climate impacts. Folks in the Polynesian areas that are already, you know, their traditional lands are underwater. So like folks from different parts are already feeling this. So there's things like migration as well from the south to the north in regards to the lack of water, the lack of access to water, the more types of storms that are happening in places like you mentioned in Puerto Rico. But, you know, it doesn't seem to be causing any alarm when you walk through the halls of the UN, and especially at the climate talks. It not from the folks that are there, the people that are there as the, you know, the representatives of countries. It's about who's going to pay for what and who's going to make money out of it. So for us, I think it's very interesting. And for civil society itself, you know, I think part of our goals when we go to these types of meetings is to try to talk about the reality people are living back home. But in many instances, what we see is that gets kind of shut down, and there's more of a corporate mentality inside that COP.
Jose, what advice do we need to implement here in the United States on transitioning, in particular, fossil fuel industry workers into a clean energy economy? We know there are two major facts that characterize what the U.S. is going through. One is that the Trump administration has been using the coal industry and workers in the coal industry as political pawns. But we also know that, for example, solar is one of the fastest growing job markets in the country. And those two should be linked facts, but they aren't being linked.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that we push very hard on through the Just Transition Alliance is local and regional economies. It is not in our best interest to have a global economy where things are made around different parts of the planet and then put together in other different parts of the planet and then brought to the United States. You know, for instance, a panel made in China and assembled in Vietnam, then making it here to the United States on my roof would probably take about 2.5 years before it becomes carbon neutral. So our goal is to try to raise awareness that production has to be local and regional, and it has to be from those folks that are in jeopardy of losing their jobs from shifting away from dirty energy. And because we realize one thing is that everybody's talking about renewable energy, everybody's talking about, you know, wind and solar and such. But, you know, a lot of our communities are still living under the legacy of dirty energy. You take 15,000 uranium mines that are abandoned on Navajo land, and, you know, there's all kinds of problems with that. So part of what we're saying is that there has to be a just transition for workers and those communities that have been in harm's way from the legacy of dirty energy as well.
It's just quite remarkable. I'm so glad you put it in this way. When we think about our global economy, the, you know, it's not just things like solar panels, every aspect of our economy, things that we buy at the department store, even food is often grown or manufactured or produced elsewhere and then transported thousands of miles just to make it here because it saves you know, the seller a few cents on the dollar, instead of making it very close to where it's actually consumed. And this sort of effort of globalizing the economy has done a tremendous amount of damage. And I'm wondering if any discussions around that took place at the COP meeting. I'm assuming lots took place at the grassroots level, but, you know, do the delegates address the very perverse design of our global economy?
No, on the other hand, I think the way that they're discussing things is about how to globalize false solutions such as RED and RED Plus into other countries.
And remind us what RED stands for, R-E-D-D.
It stands for, now you put me on the spot.
I know, I'm trying to remember too.
Emissions from deforestation and degradation.
Okay.
So that in itself, you know, I just want to give you a brief history on some of that. So carbon trading mechanisms, the first time ever on this planet that they were tried in South Central Los Angeles. Hmm. It was the Reclaim Project that wanted to take big dirty cars off the freeway and give carbon credits to companies that could get these cars recycled. That happened in South Central. Now we have it at a global level. And for us, these false solutions is about commodifying the air. And we do not believe in commodifying the air, because when push comes to shove, you know, I, as a Mexicano, a Mexican person, my air will probably not be commodified to the same extent as a white person that has a lot of money. So we'll always end up on the losing side of that. And what we see in our communities is that we push more towards these types of carbon credits and market-based approaches. Our communities are in harm's way even worse, because we could use a forest in the global south as a carbon sink, but what happens in LA or in Chicago or in different areas is that pollution actually rises, because now the United States or other countries can say that they can maintain the level of pollution or increase it in certain areas, because now we have carbon sinks on somewhere else in the planet. Mm-hmm. And for those communities here in the United States, it's not a win-win. It's actually a lose-lose situation.
Well, Jose, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Give out a website for your organization, Just Transition Alliance.
JTAlliance.org.
And we'll link to that from our website. Thank you so much, Jose.
Thank you so much.
Jose Bravo is the executive director of the Just Transition Alliance. It's based in San Diego, California. We've just been discussing the COP24 agreement that came out of the UN climate meeting in Katowice, Poland, that Jose was attending. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and now on Instagram at RU with Sonali. Thank you so much, Jose. Really appreciate it.